So how cool is this? We are sitting face to face across the table. I've got the Wayback Music Machine sitting in the driveway.
And Tony finally came in the house. He came in.
I made the road trip to Toronto, and we're sitting face to face in studio. This is absolutely amazing, and it's fantastic to finally meet you in person.
Oh, it doesn't seem real yet. Like, it still seems like, I don't know, you know, unreal, surreal. But we had a lovely dinner last night too, folks, just so you know. So this
that was
great.
Fantastic.
This is great to be sitting across the table, eye contact, not a screen.
I know. I keep forgetting that I don't have to open the Zoom window. You know, but and you know what? You've become one of my best friends. And it
Me,
is,
you too.
It is so great to finally meet you. And
oh, it's great.
So we've got an excellent show planned for you today, folks. Something a little different. We're doing the road trip for real this time, but we're still going to throw in the virtual sound effects because we like those. But how about we cue up our intro music and get started?
Sounds like a plan.
All right, here we go. Maps?
Check.
Snacks?
Double check.
Tunes?
Check.
I'm Tony Stewart.
I'm Aaron Badgley.
And we are cruising the rock and roll highway in our Wayback Music Machine. Are you ready, my friend?
I sure am.
I have the feeling this is going to be the start of a great adventure.
Kind of a magical mystery tour.
Somehow I knew you were going to say that. So for our first stop on our real rock and roll road trip, and I love alliteration, folks, so anytime I get to use it, I'll put it in there. We are going to be hopping back to San Quentin State Prison in California on July 26th, 1969. So normally when Aaron pushes the buttons, he's just banging on the table. So do you want to bang on the table?
I don't have my computer, but I'll do that. Oh, there's the pen. There we go. Hang on.
Okay, all the buttons are pushed, and let's jump back to July 26th, 1969. Aaron, what did you punch in? Because it kind of looks like 1969, but this is not California.
You know, in the excitement of you being here and I'm not on my laptop, I'm not used to this newfangled way of doing things. I think I got us in Moscow.
Oh my goodness. So we're here in Moscow, Russia in 1969, the same date, July 26th. And, you know, normally we'd be able to just hop in a phone booth and call somebody for help. But
that ain't going to happen here today.
No, it's not going to happen because what happened here? What did these kids do? I love what teenagers come up with.
So police in Moscow reported that thousands of public phone booths had been vandalized after thieves were stealing parts of phones to, you know, basically convert acoustic guitars to electric guitars. Can you? I'm so fascinated by the ingenuity of stealing phone pieces to make an electric guitar. Brilliant.
Well, oh, me too. And it's amazing in pre-internet days how the word spreads like this
through a youth magazine. Like, yeah. Just can you imagine that? And as you can see with this phone booth, it's completely gutted. Oh, I love this story because the fact that they were so into rock and roll and they wanted to, I mean, it was still banned, but they wanted to take their acoustic and stop playing those Russian morbid folk songs and play some Jimi Hendrix.
Well, that's right. And you know, that's the impact of rock and roll, right? It opened the floodgates and could not be stopped. And this is a great story to prove that.
And we had to, you know, I'm glad we did this little detour because this is one fascinating story. And future, we'll talk about how they used to, in Russia, they used to put music on X-rays because it was the same material that you could put into like those flexi discs. And they used to hand records back and forth on flexi discs like that.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's very cool. We'll talk about that in a future date.
Yeah, all that ingenuity. Well, I guess it's okay now to hop back to San Quentin.
Should we be taking any of these kids with us to San Quentin? Because if they're in jail in Russia, they're not going to enjoy what we're going to be seeing in San Quentin.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe, you know, San Quentin might be a bit of a picnic compared to a Russian jail.
Yeah. Where's Dr. Zhivago?
All right, let's punch it in for real this time. July 26th, there. 1969. We're going to be talking about some Johnny Cash. Here we go.
So for a number of years, Johnny Cash did a lot of concerts in various prisons throughout America. What he would do is he would book dates in prisons. I was going to say colleges. That was a Freudian slip. He would book dates in prisons. If he was playing, say, Ohio, he'd find a prison. He would do a prison gig, and he would do the regular gig, right? But a couple of those were recorded, and one was at San Quentin State Prison in California. And that album was a monster for Cash. I mean, that won Grammys, and it was huge. But what it also did was it provided him with a really big hit single with a really weird title.
Yeah, that was A Boy Named Sue, wasn't
it? Yeah. And you know who wrote the song, right?
That was Shel Silverstein.
The Giving Tree. Do you remember
the Giving Tree? The Giving Tree, yeah. That blew me away.
Yeah. He also wrote The Unicorn.
Did you read The Giving Tree to your kids?
I could probably recite it.
Yeah.
Both of my daughters, they love that story. And I could literally, if I give me a couple of minutes, I could recite it. You?
Yeah. Oh, same here. But Cynthia can't get through the book without tearing up. She just can't finish that story.
I'll Love You Forever. Never got through that book.
Yeah. That's another one, eh?
Yeah. But I could see why she'd find that. It's a beautiful, beautiful story. And then he wrote A Boy Named Sue.
And you know, Johnny Cash, right, had a bit of a dark side. And this, even though technically, I guess it's a kind of a comedy song, but it's a dark song as well, isn't it?
Well, and if you listen to the lyrics, when he meets his dad, there's no hug. I mean, this is about a kid whose dad wanders off when he's three. And when he meets him later on in life, they get into a fight, the blood and the guts and the beer. I mean, that's a line from the song.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly a great happy-go-lucky song, right?
Well, no, and he's bitter because his dad named him Sue, and all his life he's had to fight and, people teasing him and just had to become tough.
And what I remember about that single is that it was the first time I ever heard a bleep on the radio.
Oh, yeah.
Because he goes, I'm the son of a beep that named you Sue. He didn't say gun. We knew he said the other word. But it was beep. Do you remember that? It was always.
Yeah.
And I have a DVD of Johnny Cash in the 80s. 80s. So like 10 years after. And he's doing it on stage live. And Johnny Cash goes, well, I'm the son of beep. He actually does the beep.
and it gets more morbid from there, right? They're about to shoot each other. Like they pull guns on each other at the end of the song.
I know. It's this is the guy. Okay, again, Shel Silverstein, who wrote The Giving Tree, The Lovely Unicorn, other really lovely books for kids, End of the Sidewalk, all those books, right? It's a dark song, and it made number two.
Yeah, this was his biggest hit, wasn't it?
Okay, do you know what kept it from number one?
Oh, my goodness, I'm not sure.
Another family favorite, Honky Tonk Woman.
Oh, wow, there's a great song, too.
But it's a great song, but it's not exactly family-friendly, right?
No.
I mean, I don't know about you, Tony, but I wouldn't want my 5-year-old daughter walking around singing Honky Tonk Woman. But,
well,
you
that's
know.
Right.
But that kept it from number one, the Rolling Stones.
And, you know, I can imagine the crowd at San Quentin must have ate this up.
Oh, why wouldn't they?
Right.
Why wouldn't they? I mean, you're talking about almost killing your dad, fighting your dad, cutting off a piece of his ear.
Yeah.
Right. What the heck, right?
Yeah, it is a very dark, you know, funny, but dark at the same time. And Folsom Prison Blues, of course, I mean, I'm sure they loved that. And that's one of those songs, you know, you want to pack a dance floor if you're in a band, just start playing Folsom Prison Blues. Oh, my gosh.
Seriously? Eh?
Oh, yeah. I've done gigs with, rock bands before where it's like crickets in there. And then you just start with the bass part, you know, on Folsom Prison Blues and. Oh, it'll be packed.
Everyone's up.
And everybody's singing along. Everybody knows that song.
Yeah but I never saw it as a particularly good dance song, but.
Yeah, it's funny, eh? It was one of the more popular ones that we ever did and hilarious.
Wow. Wow. Again, I'd like to see footage of you singing that song.
Oh, okay.
That's my next bucket list. But and Folsom Prison Blues, I mean, that was the famous line, right? Shot a man in Rio just to watch him die.
Oh, that's the best line in all of music, in my opinion. Like all these, all these rap and hip hop guys who think they're badass.
Yeah.
They can't hold a candle to that line. What a great line.
And there's no remorse in it.
No, absolutely none.
No remorse. There's a reason I shot him because I just
wanted to watch him die.
Yeah.
And
total stranger.
So dark. Now, what was on the charts, though, at this time?
Well, the charts were somewhat lighter. Number five, and I'm looking at the album charts here on Billboard, Tony, and number five was The Fifth Dimension, Age of Aquarius. Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr. would go on to a big successful career from them. Tom Jones, this is Tom Jones, is number four. My mother loved Tom Jones, Tony. I don't know about your mom, but she was in love with Tom Jones. Number three was Romeo and Juliet, the soundtrack. Number two was the original Broadway recording of Hair.
Okay.
And number one of your favorites.
Oh, I love these guys.
You do. Blood, Sweat, and Tears, yep. And the self-titled album. You love them, right?
Well, I do. I love that whole horn rock era, right? Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Chicago, bands like that. Oh, yeah. My goodness. Great time.
I was reading an article about Blood, Sweat, and Tears starting. They got their big start in Greenwich Village. And, you know, those stages were not big. And they had a number of people in their band. That must have been very creative to get everyone on stage.
Oh, yeah. And it blew me away even that venues would book bands that size. Like, that doesn't happen anymore.
Oh, no. No, no. But can you imagine seeing them in a small club?
Oh, it'd be incredible. And, one of my favorite eras of music, like I said, you know, Chicago as well. Like, it's so great.
Oh, I love Chicago. I was just listening to them the other day. So, yeah. So that was the top five albums. And soon, once the Johnny Cash album came out, it would go to number one. Believe it or not, it made number one on Billboard pop charts, folks. Johnny Cash live country albums. So there you go.
So where are we heading to next? I think we're staying in California, though, aren't we? It looks like we're going to Long Beach.
Oh, for a very famous...
Yeah, how do you describe that?
Well, last week we talked about the Everly Brothers.
Yeah, breaking
up on
stage.
So this is kind of the same.
Yeah, this, in fact, I would say this could be, you know, the Everly Brothers breakup maybe on steroids, but we're going to head to July 31st, 1980. So let's go. All right, July 31st. 1980, we're in Long Beach, California, and we were just mentioning during the time travel sound effect, but it is so great to be sitting in the same room.
It's, oh, I know.
I love it. It's going to be hard to go back to the Zoom.
Well, the good news is that I'm planning to come up to your way near the end of August, so we can do this again in your home studio.
Well, absolutely, and we now know that my gear is working perfectly, so
yeah.
We're all set up. We got to do this again.
Oh, we will. We will.
Yeah. So we're at an Eagles concert at Long Beach, California, and tempers just boil over between Glenn Frey and Don Felder on stage. And they just spent the entire show describing to each other in front of the audience. Like, there's actually audio of this.
I found it on YouTube.
Yeah, me too. It's incredible. Yeah. They're talking about in front of the audience, like, only three more songs to go before I kick the crap out of you, pal.
And not joking.
No,
there was
totally
no humor in the voice.
Yeah, unbelievable. And they threatening each other and so angry. And Felder was, Fry had just totally lost it. He was, and Felder was just giving it back to him.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting story what happened. You know, they, so they were fighting over, Glenn Frey perceived that Don Felder had slighted a U.S. Senator who was there. Senator Alan Cranston's wife had thanked, Felder for participating in a benefit concert recently, and Felder wasn't sure which one she was talking about. And so he replied, "Thank you." And then as she was walking away, he said, "Well, I guess," which is kind of funny, but, Frey lost it.
Yeah.
And I think they were obviously probably intoxicated at the time because they were drinking a lot. And
a lot of drugs too.
Yeah, and a lot of drugs and tempers were wearing thin, you know, touring all the time. But Frey just lost his mind and they had it out before the show and then they headed on stage and it just continued. And I was watching Don Felder was saying, on their amps, they, like, when you watch footage of the Eagles in those days playing, right, they'd always be going back to fiddle with their amplifiers and they would have shots of liquor lined up on the amp and they would go back there under the pretense of fiddling with their amps and kick back a couple of shots, right? It was just toxic. But Fry lost his mind on stage and was, you know, I'm going to beat the crap out of you. And when the show was done, Felder, before the show was finished, had arranged with one of his roadies to have a Takamine guitar of his set aside on stage, right? And as he was walking off, he smashed it into a concrete post.
I guess they weren't taking it easy.
No, exactly. Nice one, by the way. Touché.
Could not resist. Can you imagine how awkward would that have been if you're sitting you're your age and you go to see the Eagles?
Oh my gosh!
And I mean, it's not little squabbles. We're talking threats.
Oh,
and anger and. I don't know. I guess I love the Eagles. I have all of their albums. Love them. But that's really awkward. And I guess they had just finished recording The Long Run, which had gone, pardon the pun, longer than intended. And their tempers were a bit frayed in there as well, right? I mean, they weren't getting along too well on that album. So
no. And, Felder, he smashed the guitar, hopped into a limousine and just took off.
Wow.
And it was, how many years was it before they performed? 14 years, right?
94.
Yeah, they didn't 94. Get together again until 1994 on stage. Can you imagine?
Well, I think it was a miracle they even got back together. I mean, 14 years really, if you think about it, isn't that bad. I saw Don Felder solo in Niagara Falls. And it was an interesting concert because he did nothing but songs from Hotel California and before. He didn't touch The Long Run.
Really?
Didn't touch it. I don't know why. And he didn't say anything. He just, did some solo stuff and all that. But he did mostly, Hotel California and everything before that. So,
but, that's one of the things I like about rock and roll history. Like, we can hear this audio of them threatening each other. Because Fry would say, I'm going to, three more songs until I'm kicking your ass, pal. And then.
And not joking, though, Tony.
No, not joking. Like, and then Felder's giving it right back to him.
Oh, and I mean, think of where you are. You know, you're on stage. I mean, that was a big concert. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying, performers have a right to get angry, all that stuff. But, temper it a bit. I mean, at least the Everly Brothers didn't do much better. But this was pretty nasty, right? So, although they're back together again.
Yeah.
They're playing, minus Fry?
I think so.
Glenn Fry, right?
But, I guess money talks, right? Hell freezes over and...
Nice one.
You knew,
I
was going to say that, didn't you?
I like that. That was good.
That's
very
one of the
good.
Greatest album titles of all time, by the way.
Actually, and not for a reunion album, not bad.
Yeah.
It's not that bad. But the Eagles were just not, they were trapped at Hotel. I was going to make another joke and I lost my footing.
But now, what was on the charts that week?
I just think we should stage a fight.
That's right. Two middle-aged white guys in their 50s duking it out.
Put that on Facebook.
That's right.
That'll go viral. Without masks, too, by the way.
That's right. Not socially
masked.
Distancing.
Not masked. So on the album charts, that is an interesting time, 1980, because you had... Well, I'm going to tell you, you had Pete Townsend's solo album called Empty Glass, which I still love. I love that album. And then this surprised me, Tony. I don't know if it surprised you. The soundtrack to The Empire Strikes Back. I mean, great movie, but I couldn't picture myself at 16 putting the headphones on to listen to The Empire Strikes Back.
No, I can't either. I mean, I knew a few guys in high school who did, but...
Wow.
Although, out of all the Star Wars movies, I think that is the best one.
I concur. That was by far the strongest movie. And it was like because it was the middle film, right?
That's right.
Of the original three. And I love that movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have you kept up with them?
Well, you know what? I stopped because I found the magic was gone. You know?
Right. I bet you, later on we'll talk, I'll bet money that we stopped at the same movie. I just thought I can't stay invested here.
No, I don't want to invest any more time in that. No.
although... The Wookiee Christmas special was pretty special. Number three is an album I'm sure you have in your collection. Billy Joel, Glass Houses.
I was spinning it the other day, actually, really? On my record player. Yeah,
that's a good album. Number two is Eric Clapton, Just One Night. I never hear that anymore on the radio. And number one was the Rolling Stones, Emotional Rescue. And just because I like to tie everything back to the Beatles, number 10 was McCartney 2, which was making its way up the charts still. It would peak at number three. So,
and you know, speaking of McCartney, but it was really cool to finally see your Beatles shrine here.
Thank you.
Yeah, shrine. I love it. Yeah, the shrine. It is amazing. Aaron is a record collector extraordinaire. And,
well, thank you.
It is very, very cool. But I mean, it's just neat to see all those albums and singles and all
yet,
the merch and everything.
You brought me a magazine I didn't even know existed, never mind had. So thank you very much.
Oh, very cool.
Paul McCartney.
Oh, yeah.
That was very cool. I was looking at it just before, you know, looking at all the interviews. So thank you very much for that.
Oh, no, you're quite welcome. So I guess we're going to jump ahead again, but this one is a little bit of a Beatles theme. Can you punch it in? Well, we're going to go back.
We're going backwards.
Yeah, we're going back to August 1st, 1971. So
boop, boop.
Cue up the time machine sound effect, and here we go. Thank you for listening to this podcast. We'd like to just take a moment to suggest another one that you might like.
The Essence of Cool is a fantastic podcast that gives you a behind-the-scenes look at music, some interesting guests, some great conversation, and we had the privilege of throwing the host out of our van.
Oh, that's right, back in our inaugural episode. Essence of Cool is hosted by Bernard Fraser, and each episode he's got fascinating guests, great stories, and he's got a fantastic ability to bring out the best in whoever he's talking with, doesn't he?
And tuck and roll. He does a fantastic tuck and roll.
That's right. So check out his show, folks. It's theessenceofcool.com or wherever you get your podcasts. I can't wait to check out his next episode. And now, let's get back to our road trip.
So, Tony, we're going to stop here at Madison Square Garden, a place that you and I plan to be in February or March of next year to see Mr. Billy Joel.
Oh, I cannot wait.
That's going to be brilliant. I've never seen a concert. You've been to Madison Square Garden. I haven't, so.
Yeah, I've been to Madison Square Gardens once.
Yeah.
And on a band tour with the high school kids and happened to be there when the Rangers were practicing.
That's so cool.
Isn't that amazing? So
cool.
And some of them took time to talk to the kids, which they were just...
Oh, over the moon.
Oh, over the moon, yeah.
Well, I'd rather talk to a New York Ranger than a... No, never mind. But we're at August 1st, and there's a very special event happening. There was two concerts in one day, but it's called the Concert for Bangladesh, and they were organized by George Harrison to aid the victims of famine and war in Bangladesh. And it was a stellar, stellar lineup. It was Bob Dylan, Ringo Starr, Leon Russell, Badfinger, our favorite, Billy Preston, and of course, George Harrison. Ravi Shankar performed. It was pre-live. It was the first concert of that kind.
It was absolutely groundbreaking. And
yeah.
Ravi Shankar, right, had called Harrison asking for help. And I think I read that Shankar was hoping to raise like $25,000 or something.
Yeah. And he was like, can you maybe donate some money? There's a great film clip on YouTube where Harrison's being asked, why did you do that? Like, how come you do this? And Harrison looks at the camera and goes, because I was asked by a friend to help. That was all it took. And Harrison, Clapton was there. He just got on the phone and got all of these people to donate. It was totally free. All the money went to later on it got tangled up in taxes, but that's another story. And that was his big advice to Bob Geldof. Just avoid the UNICEFs, avoid Salvation Army, just give the money yourself. But it was a hell of a concert. It was a movie, triple album set. And it's Bob Dylan was his first performance since his motorcycle accident in America.
Mm-hmm.
Came out into Harrison didn't even know that Dylan would show. Like he knew he had invited Bob. Bob was really stage fright. He hadn't been on a stage for 5 years.
Yeah, I remember that Harrison really, really was hoping he would make it.
And that segment, you know, when he does Hard Rain's Gonna Fall and Tambourine Man, it's an incredible, I wish of all the concerts I could have gone back in time to go to, this is one I wish I could have gone to.
Well, that's right. And Ringo was there, of course, because they are so close.
And you know, John was supposed to come.
Yeah.
But because George didn't want Yoko to perform, John refused to perform. Ah, c'est la vie.
And he bailed like 2 days before the show.
He bailed to England. He was in New York with Yoko. He says to Yoko, I'm going to go get a newspaper and hop to flight. She didn't even know.
Oh, my goodness.
He called her from England and said, oh, I'm back in England. Oh, yeah?
Wow.
That's a hell of a newspaper, folks. But yeah, he bailed big time. But the album was huge, won a Grammy. It's a classic album. And I'm surprised, actually, that this year they didn't release a 50th anniversary. Mm-hmm. I'm actually quite surprised because we just...
Well, it's yet another thing that happened in 1971, right? Oh, like 71. We always talk about, you know, potentially the greatest year in rock and roll history.
Well, there's a new documentary, is there not?
Yeah, it's called 1971. Yeah. It's on Apple TV. And right. I've watched the first episode of it, but amazing.
How was it?
Oh, it's great.
Is it? I haven't seen it yet. Yeah.
Yeah. They spend quite a bit of time talking about, in this first episode, they're talking about Marvin Gaye's What's Going On, right?
Classic album. Yeah. Not the best dub of all time, folks, but classic album.
Well, the classic, and I agree with you there. Yeah.
But, you know, we talked about this many times because we talked about Tapestry. And Tapestry this week was, at the time of this concert, was number one. But you look at the top five albums. You have the Jesus Christ Superstar soundtrack. You have Ram at number four. Three is the Rolling Stones' Sticky Fingers. Two is, in my opinion, my favorite James Taylor album, Mudslide Slim. Can't say that fast. And The Blue Horizon.
Yeah, that's a great album.
I think it's his best. I really do. I like it more than Sweet Baby James. I think there was some real good material. And then number one was Carole King. But number eight was Aqualung.
Oh, yeah.
Number 14, Blue by Joni Mitchell. And number 16, this new guy, new to the scene, John Denver, with an album that I'm going to say right now is fantastic, called Poems, Prayers, and Promises.
Well, and you know I'm a Denver fan, so...
You saw him live. I never saw him live. Yeah.
But, you know, going back to Tapestry, like that, you know, you look at... That makes her accomplishment even more impressive is when you look at all the albums that came out that year.
And she went to number one. I mean, she stole the show, right?
And kept it there for a long time. Like, wow.
Well, I think for a long time, it was the biggest selling album of all time.
Yeah.
I think it got knocked off by Saturday Night Fever. Coincidentally, two albums of the biggest selling albums of all time that kept McCartney from number one, Tapestry with Ram, Saturday Night Fever with London Town. And I have some personal resentment. But all kidding aside, no, that concert, and we were talking just a minute ago, Tony, before we started, you know, recording, you just watched the Billy Preston segment where he does That's the Way God Planned It. Mm-hmm. Fantastic, wasn't it?
Oh, amazing. I mean, if you're not religious, you are going to be after watching that, right?
Yeah, I think that's how I found religion, Billy Preston, yeah. First of all, I love that song.
Yeah, it's a great song.
It's a lost classic. But his performance, when he gets out from behind that big old organ and he's just dancing across the stage, how can you not smile?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I love this man.
You know, and the whole concert, what a spectacular. And twice in one day, right? 2:30 and 8 o'clock.
And I don't know if you remember the album very well, but on the album, Shankar is tuning up. And it takes him about 3 minutes to tune up. And the crowd cheers, thinking it was a song. And Shankar says, well, if you enjoyed my tuning, perhaps you'll like the music.
Great. Good for him.
Wonderful. It's just a wonderful event. Wonderful event. So, yeah, that was 50 years ago, August 1st, man.
Oh, that's incredible.
Crazy.
Well, are you ready to hop back to our virtual present here? And we're going to introduce a new segment today, so...
Yes, I'm always ready. This is so great.
It is. It's fantastic. I pinch me here because it's so different being in the same room.
I love it. Now I feel spoiled now. Now I think like, well, how do we go back to the Zoom thing? But we will.
Well, we got to go back to the Zoom thing in about 2 days.
Yes, we do.
So, all right. Well, let's jump to the present. And all right, here we go. And we're back, and a super interesting road trip this time.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And, you know, on our first show that we did together, we used to have a segment. We've been chatting about, we wanted to have a final wrap-up segment here. And we had a great segment on the old show called 6 Degrees of Beatlemania. And Rick, my friend Rick Denis, wrote music specifically for that. And we both thought, what a great idea, because, you know, whenever we're researching the history for this show, like we go through the week that was in rock history and we look at every day, and every day there's something with the Beatles. I mean, we could just do this podcast literally about what the Beatles were doing in rock history. And, you know, we quite often deliberately don't pick Beatles things because that's all we talk about. So we're going to introduce a segment or reintroduce a segment called 6 Degrees of Beatlemania and maybe pick one thing that the Beatles were up to this week in rock and roll history. So cue the music.
So, Tony, I thought I'd do something because you're here in my home and you're so welcome. And I, as you said earlier, I feel like I have a new best friend and I'm so happy. And I got to show you something. I love to show my very good friends my collection. And you were very kind to be patient as I go through my records. And one of the things I showed you was the Butcher cover.
Yeah.
And in 1966, this week, the Beatles started a 5-week run with an album called Yesterday and Today, which was number one. Now, what makes that album special is the original cover. How do you describe this? The Beatles are sitting with slabs of meat. They're wearing butcher smocks and they've got rather mischievous grins and baby doll parts all over them.
Yeah, and blood.
it's rather dark. And it was a statement by the Beatles because I don't know if you know this or not, but in England, the Beatles would record an album, 14 tracks. They did 2 albums a year and they put out 2 albums a year. But the Americans, and they also put out non-album singles. But Capitol Records would take those 28 tracks plus the singles and make new albums that didn't exist anywhere else other than North America. And the Beatles hated it because they would sequence albums. They did Rubber. If you look at the British Rubber Soul compared to the American one, you know, the Beatles hated what what Capitol Records did. So when Capitol came up with this album between Rubber Soul and Revolver, they called over to London and said, we need a photograph. So the Beatles went, right, we'll send you a photograph. And they sent the Butcher cover.
And you know what? It's great because they're all smiling too.
Yeah, they are smiling.
They're just sitting there at a picnic, you know.
And the cover that they pasted over, none of them are smiling because they were like, you know, Paul's in a kind of a carry case or suitcase and they're all random. So the famous Butcher cover came out. And it was taken off the shelves, but rather than destroying them, yeah.
This just gets me every time, too.
Rather than destroying all of them, which would have cost money, Capitol simply pasted the new cover over top of it. You could clearly see under it there was another cover. So when I was 10 and a friend of my brother's gave it to me, I steamed off the cover. I wanted to see the Butcher cover. So I still have it. I'm very proud of that. That's like one of my most prized possessions.
Well, you know, that's like I was telling you, I had this discussion with kids at school, like when we're talking about rock and roll history. You know, the reactions of parents to rock and roll, right? Don't listen to that. Well, I said to them, what's the first thing you're going to do if I tell you or your parents tell you, don't listen to that? And they're like, yeah, I'm running out and listen to that. And yeah. Absolutely. And
yeah.
What's the first thing you're going to do when you get the album cover?
Like, you're going to pull it off. Yeah. Well, it's like Salman Rushdie, you know, Satanic Verses book. Remember, it got banned everywhere. So I bought a copy. Most boring book I've ever read, by the way. But, you know, I hope you're not a fan, I hope. But
No, I found it boring, too.
Thank you. All right. Tony, this is why we get along so well. But it wasn't the most boring. But you're right. Something gets banned. I was 10. I wanted to see the infamous Butcher. And I still find it as a prized possession. So.
Oh, that was very cool seeing that in person. Because I've actually never seen a real copy of the Butcher cover. I've only seen, you know, online.
Yeah, they're getting scarcer and scarcer. So yeah, so that's what happened in 1966, the Beatles and their infamous Butcher cover.
Awesome. Well, my friend, this has been super fun recording this episode. I loved every minute of it.
You and me both. This has been so, I'm going to say it again, surreal, but it's so, and now I like it. I don't want to do the other way, but we'll go back to it.
Well, you know what? When you come to Ottawa, we'll do the same thing.
I think
we should cue up the outro music and we should just go hang out for a while. What do you think?
I think that's a grand idea. Yes.
Music for today's episode of the Wayback Music Machine podcast was written by Rick Denis. The show notes, chart selection, and Spotify playlist were created by Aaron Badgley.
And the artwork, recording, editing, and sound production was done by Tony Stewart. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to tell a friend or two. And don't forget to click follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast player to get the latest episodes automatically.
And we'd love it if you would leave us a review. You can also engage with the show by going on our website and leaving us a voicemail. We may even play your voicemail on an upcoming episode.
Thanks for taking this road trip with us, and we'll see you next time on the Wayback Music Machine Podcast.
Hey, turn the radio up. I love this song. The Wayback Music Machine Podcast is a Stewie Tunes production.